everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Rocks. It's been a while since we've done one of these. This is the episode 302, if you're watching along with us on the network, the March 8th, 1999 episode of Monday Night Raw, and I'm joined, as always, by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you today?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing okay. I'm getting better. My voice is definitely still not back to 100%, but I am working on it. It was kind of a lovely feeling last night when I was like, okay, I have to watch Retro Raw, you know, after I got home from work and everything. And then I realized, wait, I've already seen this episode of Retro Raw because I watched it in case we were going to record earlier this week. And it's just a lovely feeling when I'm like, oh, I don't actually have to watch this show because I already watched it. So yeah, that was pleasant.
Whatever gets you through the day, Sondra.
So then I did laundry instead because I was like, this can't be that pleasant, right?
No. We're back. There's a bit of a kind of ad hoc podcast schedule this week because the interview cast for this week is now going up tomorrow, Wednesday, which will be with PCO of ROH. He's going to be part of the big Madison Square Garden show, so I'll be talking to him about his run in ROH and, of course, at great length about his time as a Quebecer.
I'm so excited to listen to that.
I really wanted to make sure we got him on the show, so just with schedules and stuff, I had to be put back a little bit. So basically this week, today's Tuesday, you get one of the backlog Retro Raws. Tomorrow you'll have Interview Cast. Thursday, you'll have Inside the Ropes with me and Sondra, and then Friday it'll be Power Slam with me and Finn, and then probably another Retro catch-up episode on Saturday. So there'll be a podcast every day for you this week. It's like 7 days, seven podcasts, but without the fanfare.
Without the fanfare, and we're not in New York having a blast yet, but like 2 weeks from tomorrow we're going to be in New York together, and that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm very excited.
I am too.
It's I was talking to Ollie about it last night. We talked about this on Yellow Ropes Forever, that like WrestleMania, there's enough stuff on WrestleMania to get excited about, like, in terms of, somebody put it to me this week yesterday that like this year's WrestleMania could be like the biggest lip service great WrestleMania. You know, if Seth beats Brock and Becky beats Ronda and Kofi beats Bryan, you know, if you have all this stuff. I mean, that's not what's going to happen, but you know,
we can dream.
Let us live in our dream world. But yeah, so usually NXT TakeOver is the big card of the weekend, but that's not even really setting my world on fire that much. And it's saying something that I know it's not just me, because you were even going through scenarios on the podcast yesterday about other shows you could be going to.
Yeah, I know. There are other shows I would almost rather be at than TakeOver, which is strange for me because it's TakeOver, you know, like I should be the most excited for TakeOver ever. But I don't know. It's maybe my tastes are changing. Maybe this card just isn't that exciting. I don't think that TakeOver is going to be a bad show. It's not like I'm not going to enjoy TakeOver. I'm sure it's going to be good, but it's, you know, it's just kind of fine. It's just kind of there. I mean, we'll see what happens in the next couple weeks too, because I still don't know all what's on the card. I still don't know what's happening with the title, like the main NXT title. Velveteen Dream Matt Riddle sounds amazing. Like, that sounds like it could be really great. But the Fatal 4-Way should be fun. But yeah, like, it's all just kind of like, no, that's going to be a good, fun show to be at. It's not like I'm salivating and being like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for TakeOver. Like, I'm more excited for WrestleMania itself, which is rare.
You've become one of us, Sondra.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
You fought it for so long.
But I mean, I'm the most excited for like Chikara and Black Label, to be honest. So,
of course.
And Kaiju. Kaiju's going to be so good.
There is events for everybody WrestleMania weekend. So let's kick off, before we talk about the March 8th, 1999 edition of Raw, quickly run through what happened on Heat the night before. Another bonkers show, where The Rock comes out. Now, Terry Taylor is on commentary with Kevin Kelly. The Rock comes out, he's talking about how he cuts a promo in Austin about how there's a book called The Rock versus Stone Cold, it's got infinite chapters and blah, blah, blah. And then he calls a conspiracy that he thinks that Paul White is working with Steve Austin, and he basically is kind of putting out of his mind that Paul White is a traitor. He's scum. And then Howard Finkel proceeds to tell Paul White all that as he arrives at the building right after the promo. Then we had the Public Enemy against the Acolytes, and
wow, does that sound like a match?
This is the infamous match where the Acolytes kind of go into business for themselves against Public Enemy, and it is really horrific to watch. It is brutal, and not even in like a good stiff wrestling match. They were just taking liberties with these guys, and Bradshaw's a piece of shit here, like just the worst. I'm glad he seems to have got better over the years and stuff, but it's really hard to watch him in this match and have any sort of good feeling towards that performer.
Well, it's not like he hasn't been kind of a piece of shit in recent years, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, Howard Finkel then tells The Rock about that Paul White's looking for him. So Howard Finkel, for whatever reason, is like playing The Rock and Paul White off against each other and then leaves.
Howard Finkel's being the Charlie Caruso of the situation.
He is. Then we get Jeff Jarrett versus Road Dogg. My favorite part in the lead up to this was when there was a graphic for it early in the show, and Terry Taylor, not really knowing what like characters he's supposed to be talking about, said, "Yeah, the Roadie and Double J go way back." Nope.
I mean, they do. That's true, but they're such different characters at this point. That's hilarious.
Then we had Billy Gunn and Val Venis against Ken Shamrock and Goldust, which lasted 50 seconds.
Why is Ken Shamrock teaming with Goldust?
Because Ryan Shamrock is with Goldust, so I guess that means they're on the same side for. I mean, it doesn't last. It lasts 50 seconds, and then they all end up fighting, and Ryan leaves with Goldust. And, but the Kevin Kelly, God bless him, because he's so ridiculous. So here's the scenario as Hulk takes a massive gulp of his water in the background. So Ryan Shamrock leaves with Goldust at the end of this no contest, right? Going into WrestleMania.
Right.
Kevin Kelly then says, as Ryan leaves with Goldust, "Does this mean Goldust holds all the cards heading into WrestleMania? Because he's with
How does
Ryan?"
he hold all the cards? I don't
Because
understand.
he's with
Like,
Ryan, apparently.
so? Ken Shamrock loves to just beat people up who are with his sister.
We have established this. We got a Mean Street Posse promo. We got Tiger Ali Singh trying to get Kurt Angle to blow his nose in the American flag.
By the way, I actually did watch this episode of Heat, or I watched up until about this point because I autoplayed after the one before it. Like, and this was like 2 weeks ago, so I don't remember a lot of details of what you're talking about. But I did not realize that Kurt Angle's WWF debut was on an episode of Heat with Tiger Ali Singh. Can we talk about that?
Nobody really talks about that, but yeah, that is, they have this nice moment for him in Pittsburgh. He's the hometown hero. Now, here's the thing I don't get. So you know how like I've learned this over the years that like the flag in America means so much.
Yes.
It has a lot of different connotations as to, the UK, of how we have like the a Union Jack flag or a Scotland flag or an England flag. You would have that like tied around you at a football game. That's just it's. But in America, the flag is very sacred. But what makes me laugh so much here, typical fucking America, is that Kurt Angle will not dare desecrate the United States of America flag and blow his nose on it, but he will to the Indian one.
Oh
With
no, it's a dick move for sure.
like, but that's like there is that whole thing about like America, the flag is so important, but we'll blow our nose in the other guy's flag, no problem. That's fine.
Which I've never understood because I've always like, because I was raised to like respect the flag, right? Like I have family members who are military and like very hardcore into the flag. Like one of my uncles gets really, really angry when they lower the flag. Like when people die, he's like, no, the only reason it should be half-mast is if the president himself dies, right? And so like these are discussions I've had over family dinner. And so I always feel weird when people do it to any flag because I just figure that should extend to other countries. Like if people are shitty to the Canadian flag or if they're shitty to the UK flag or something like that, then it's always bugged me just like on that inherent level, even though like I know it's a piece of cloth, like I shouldn't care. But I've never understood the whole like, why is it okay to do things to other people's flags? Because it seems like they should be held in just their regard.
It makes sense. I mean, yeah, I'll never understand the American flag thing, but it did make me laugh that Kurt Angle would happily just blow his nose into the Indian one. But any further comments about Kurt Angle's debut involving Tiger Ali Singh?
I mean, it's just not the most glorious debut ever, is it? Right? Like, I know his pay-per-view debut is at Royal Rumble 2000, because we've seen that. So that's, you know, not a spoiler
That's not
for
that's
me.
Not his pay-per-view debut. That was
It's not his pay-per-view debut?
That's
Oh, that was
Taz's.
Taz's debut. Oh, that's right.
Kurt Angle debuts at the 99 Survivor Series.
Okay, I was like, there was a debut involved in that match. I was just confused. But like, for this to be Kurt Angle's WWF debut, really? Like, on an episode of Heat with Tiger Ali Singh, did they see big things for Kurt Angle? Like, was he signed at this point?
He was signed, yeah, but he wasn't ready to do anything, so this was just kind of an idea to get him out there in front of people.
It was just interesting, because, like, we've never heard the name Kurt Angle. We've not seen any vignettes, and all of a sudden there he was, and I was just very surprised by the whole situation.
You know, it's funny, his career begins with Tiger Ali Singh and it ends with Baron Corbin. Draw your own parallels.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Oh, that's
funny.
We
will talk about that on Thursday.
Yes, we will.
Jesus Christ.
I haven't watched any of Raw yet, but I have like read a few things about it, and I need to watch some clips.
Al Snow faced the Big Boss Man on Heat, and it went about a minute and 50 seconds, and it was absolutely atrocious. And then Paul White comes out of the main event, him and The Rock jaw jack against each other as if they're about to fight. Then Austin's music hits. Rock orders Big Show to go up to the ramp, and as he does, Austin slides in the ring and gives a stunner to Rock, which is how that played in the opening video package to this episode, which sets us up for this episode of Raw. Jesus, I feel like I've done a cardio workout already.
And we haven't even gotten to Raw yet.
So, The Rock comes out, he's raging about what happened on Heat. He demands that Paul White come out and face him, but Vince McMahon comes out instead. Vince says, you know, stop airing corporate laundry in public. You know, you should be using that, channeling that aggression towards the fans. They're the problem, blah, blah, blah. And then Vince McMahon tells The Rock that Paul White is loyal to the corporation, and then goes on to talk about how he's like, he's a first-class card-carrying member. Like, there was, like, classes and luggage, but Paul White was a premier.
I mean, it's basically just, like, you know, being a Mighty Marvelite or whatever, right? Like, he's a card-carrying member. He's fully all in on the corporation.
Yeah, apparently so. So Vince is obviously trying to, you know, make Rock calm down, all that kind of stuff. Then, obviously, it brings out Paul White. They're kind of having an argument, which brings out Mankind, who has officially been made the second guest referee for the main event of WrestleMania, but then Vince decides that he's going to counter that and that Foley can get the referee's job at WrestleMania as long as he faces Stone Cold Steve Austin tonight, and the man who will be the referee in that match is the only man that can be entrusted, and it's Paul White. There was a lot in this opening segment, Sandra.
There's a lot, and it's also convoluted. Like, it was hard for me to follow some of it, especially because, was it last week? Again, like, it's been so long since I've done Retro Raw. Like, last week or the week before, The Rock and Paul White had this dissension, right? Like, they opened the show, and they were fighting, and they were mad at each other, and they were going to have a match. And then it turned out to just be a ruse so they could beat up Mankind. So now when The Rock is like, I do not trust Paul White, I think Paul White is bad, I'm just like, is this still part of the ruse? Like, what are you on about? Like, now you don't trust. Real, it's hard for me to actually like buy into the stakes of some of this because of like things being subverted constantly, and so I had some trouble following it. And then like Mankind's adorable, I love Mankind, but then they're like, okay, he's been made the second referee for WrestleMania. I don't know when that happened. I don't know when he got made the second guest referee for WrestleMania. Was that on Raw or was that on backstage and they didn't tell us?
It happened at some point. On some
so
show.
At some point, he has been made the second referee, but oh no, wait, change my mind. No, he hasn't been made the second referee. Now he needs to fight Stone Cold Steve Austin tonight. And it's good in the sense that it sets up Mankind versus Stone Cold Steve Austin with Paul White as the special guest referee, which gives some stakes to a match later in the show, makes you want to keep watching. But like, don't tell me that he was made the second referee and then just be like, oh no, just kidding. Because then if you beat Stone Cold Steve Austin tonight or whatever, then I'm still not going to believe it because you could just change your mind again.
Yeah. No, that's fair points. It's funny because I watched this episode of Raw. I rewatched it today and I'd watched it in February because I did like one day I just went through a mass amount of retro Raws that we were going to be covering and just kind of went, I can do this ahead of time. But this wouldn't have been too long. So anyway, long story short, today I watched it over again. And after watching last night's 2019 three-hour Raw, where I feel like two and a half things happened. And like this show, I mean, there is like subplot and subterfuge, and there's so many elements going on that it's, you can barely keep up with the opening segment here with who, with what people's motives are. I thought it was a fun segment, and it's keeping Mankind kind of in the conversation. You know, he's not obviously going to be wrestling in the main event at WrestleMania, but he's still involved. And, you know, it's sometimes nice for the people who aren't the winners to still be involved, Sandra, and get a little, you know, trophy.
That's true. And I mean, like, I would like him to get his dream of being a referee, I suppose. I'm not super sure why that's his dream. But if that's his dream, then I want him to go for it. But it's just the whole, like, he's been made the referee. Oh, no, he hasn't been made the referee. He needs to have another match. And it gets to me. It's just Vince being Vince all over the place, and I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan in 2019. I'm not a fan in 1999.
The Undertaker and the Ministry go into a locker room. They're asking some jobbers if they've seen the Big Boss Man. They say no. Then the Ministry just beats the shit out of the guys as a message for the Boss Man.
Which, like, is the Boss Man really going to care? Do you think that the Big Boss Man is going to come across two gentlemen who've been laid out by the Ministry and be like, oh no, alas, I am so concerned about the well-being of these humans? No, he's the Big Boss Man. He's a cunt.
Yes. Yes, Sandra, he is. That's language I did not expect. Steve Austin and Mankind have an adorable backstage segment because Mankind's can say, you know, look, you know, if you just let me win tonight, then it'd be fine. Austin's like, I'm not going to let you win. Like, you know, if we're going to fight, I'm going to whip your ass. And then Austin basically says, I'm going to kick your ass, and walks away. And then Mankind, just in this very adorable way, just kind of goes, okay, but if you change your mind, just give me a little signal, like a... And
he like kind of winks at him and does a little hand gesture. It was adorable. Mankind is adorable. And you'd think that in this scenario, Stone Cold Steve Austin would kind of want Mankind to be the second referee, right? Because I don't think that Stone Cold Steve Austin should necessarily be trusting Paul White as the referee for this particular match. Because even though Paul White and The Rock have some dissension, Paul White is still going to be on the side of the corporation, right? So you'd think that Stone Cold Steve Austin would want someone who is more amenable to him in his corner. And Mankind and Stone Cold Steve Austin do have a long storied history, right? I mean, they were tag team champions together in another form. So it would make sense for Stone Cold Steve Austin to want Mankind to win this match. But Stone Cold Steve Austin is Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he never wants to lose anything because he's Austin.
So, yeah, which leads us to where we are. But I think the motivation, I guess, for Austin is he doesn't want anything handed to him. Doesn't want to feel like he owes things to anybody, which is fair.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not necessarily bad. It's just, you know, an observation.
Yeah. We then got a Steel City street fight, which was D'Lo Brown against Owen Hart. Obviously, this has all been... They've been feuding with each other for the last kind of month or so. And in the end, D'Lo pins Owen Hart after hitting him with a guitar. And there wasn't really much to say about it. It was kind of there as, oh, this fucking dog, Sandra. He decides to pick up his massive bone and come near me when I'm podcasting. This is an unacceptable hug. Anyway, sorry. So D'Lo pins Owen Hart in 4.5 minutes after hitting him with a guitar.
I thought the guitar shot thing was pretty cleverly timed, actually, because didn't Deborah get the guitar and she was going to pass it over to Owen Hart, but then D'Lo Brown kind of intercepts the guitar and hits Owen with it as the ref is kind of dealing with Deborah in the corner? Yes. Or it was either Deborah or Jeff Jarrett, I can't remember, but one of them had the guitar and was trying to pass it over. So I thought that spot was pretty cleverly timed. Owen Hart and D'Lo Brown are both very good at wrestling, so this is something I didn't mind watching. Because it was actually like, I mean, it was fine. It was a street fight, so it wasn't like... was it a street fight so the guitar didn't even have to be behind the ref's back? I forgot it was a street fight.
It was a street fight, yeah.
Oh, okay. So then the guitar would have been totally fine and legal for use anyway. But I'm pretty sure the ref was still distracted at that point and didn't see the guitar shot or something. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought it wasn't bad. It was fine.
The Undertaker is ordering the Acolytes to patrol the parking lot. Viscera and Midian are sent to the locker room. The Brood are sent to the front of the arena to look for the Big Boss Man. So I've got to give Undertaker something, right? He might have picked some of the shittest members of his crew ever, but he delegated here very efficiently.
He did delegate very efficiently. I think my favorite part of this, like, I really enjoyed Viscera's reaction. I almost called him Mabel. That's not his name anymore. But like, Viscera just being like, Yeah, boss, I'm gonna get it. My favorite thing though is watching the brood in these segments. Because if you watch Edge and Christian, like Christian's just standing there like he's bored. Like he almost has Orange Cassidy face going on, right? Like where he's just like, so I'm here, I'm in the brood, whatever. I'm gonna go look for the boss man. And then Edge has like, you know, he's like hitting his fingers together and being like, yes, I'm so excited. Let's go look for the boss man. He's like, has the most expressive face ever because he's Edge, right? So just the contrast between Edge and Christian in these segments just cracks me up. And it's been a thing that I've been noticing with the Brood kind of throughout Retro Raw so far. And just comparing the two of them, where Christian just looks like he doesn't want there. And Edge is like the most excited to be in the Brood. And Gangrel's just Gangrel because he's just hanging out. But yeah, the Undertaker delegated. The Ministry is so shit.
They are terrible, but you know, he delegated well. We're gonna give him that compliment. The New Age Outlaws then took on Al Snow and Hardcore Holly. They have a match that goes 2.5 minutes when Billy Gunn ends up pinning Bob Holly after a spike pile driver, and so the Outlaws get the win. Any thoughts on this and the two singles feuds for Road Dogg and Billy Gunn leading at WrestleMania? Do you prefer them apart?
I kind of prefer the part, but I don't really remember any of this match.
That's fine. I mean, I was really just trying to stall you while I got a bone out of Hulk's mouth, but you know, it didn't work.
Well, and I had you muted, like I was muted because I was coughing, so I didn't even really hear much of the description of the match, and I just don't remember it very well. So clearly, it wasn't very memorable. But having the New Age Outlaws like back together is not really what I prefer. I kind of prefer them to be apart because I like Billy Gunn quite a bit, and Road Dogg is not very good. But when he can just sort of like dance at people, it's fine, I guess.
It's called Jive, Sondra.
Okay.
After the match, though, the lights go out, the Ministry hits the ring and attacks everybody. Viscera's splashing everybody. The
Yeah,
under.
the lights went out, and I was like, is it going to be the Brood? Is it going to be a bloodbath? No, it's the Ministry music. Every time. And it's weird because normally the lights go out, and I think it's going to be Kane, right? And now the lights go out, and I like start to think it's going to be the Brood. And then I get even more disappointed when I hear the Undertaker's music.
I mean, it's almost impressive that you still find ways to insult him more with it. Like, you know, and here's another thing Undertaker's done to me over the years. He's
There's
ruined
just so much.
lights going out. Which, to be fair, he
It's
has.
true.
He has. And basically the gist of it is Undertaker gets the mic and warns that by the end of the night, Boss Man will meet the Lord of Darkness.
We
Yada, yada,
want to
yada.
do a murder to the boss man, essentially, is what we're together, right?
Yes, that is the firm insinuation, is that we're going
Okay.
to be getting a murder. But yeah, I mean,
Are they
look.
trying to recruit the boss man? Like the way that he recruited Dennis Knight and
No.
Mabel? Like he just wants to murder him straight up.
He's going to be like a sacrificial lamb for the corporation.
Isn't that what Midian was?
Well, no, because Midian was just like a shite wrestler that they just got. I
Yeah, but
mean,
I mean, they
like.
sacrificed him too.
I think they want to like kill the big boss man and then set him on fire so he's dead and then be like, look at this corporation, we could do this to you if you
Okay.
don't stay
He
out of
could
our
do
way.
more murders.
I love the Ministry because they're so atrocious. Like, they're so bad. Anyway, up next, a very interesting segment. Jim Ross comes out. He asks Michael Cole, he's got a bag with him. He asks Michael Cole to come in the ring. Michael calls it, you know, what's in the bag? And JR then pulls out this mask and stuff that they were going to have Dr. Dusty Williams wear, and he knocks the creative team. He just goes to town, and then he turns around to Michael Cole and he says, you know, I got your start here, yada, yada, yada. But let me leave you with something to remember me by, and then kicks Michael Cole in the nuts and then goes to take his place on commentary. Jerry Lawler sort of awkwardly welcomes him back, as if like, am I supposed to be doing this? Then we have Vince McMahon backstage ordering Terry Taylor to get rid of Jim Ross at commentary, which led me to a segment, or led us, sorry, to a segment that I still treasure, which is when Jim Ross is saying they're replacing JR with the Red Rooster on commentary. Seriously? Which, you know, God bless Terry Taylor, there's no comeback to that. You are the Red Rooster. So it's, you know, he can't exactly do anything. Terry Taylor, also awful at commentary, atrocious.
He's not very good.
But yeah, talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on this segment playing out, because it's kind of fascinating to watch it 20 years later. And I mean, you know, it is kind of, this is the attempt to make JR a heel. What do you make of what they're doing here?
I hate all of this. Like, I hate all of this. This is my least favorite thing they've done. Well, Ryan Shamrock is my least favorite thing on Retro Raw right now, but this is a close second. This, like, it's just kind of everything I hate when you're trying to be shocking and edgy, right? Because like JR bringing out the outfit that they wanted Dr. Death Steve Williams to wear when it was like colorful and, you know, there was a lucha mask and whatnot. And yeah, does that necessarily make sense for Dr. Death Steve Williams? No. But for a character on a show to come out and be like, "What kind of creative is this? I hate this creative business." Like, that just sort of takes you out of the show, right? Because it's like, okay, so now you're just calling attention to the fact that there are writers and there's a script and all that kind of stuff, which kind of takes you out of the drama. JR does not come across as likable here. Like, he really doesn't. I just don't understand who it's supposed to get over or what the point is supposed to be. Because an announcer feud is not interesting to me. We've talked about that before, right? Like, I don't want to sacrifice good wrestling storytelling at the expense of getting an announcer over. That was the biggest problem with heel Michael Cole when I first started watching wrestling, was like building to Michael Cole versus Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania. Like, who the fuck could possibly care? And no one did. And it was atrocious, right? And so here you have JR, who's an announcer and an interviewer and a backstage, you know, like EVP or whatever. And he is taking up all this time to just like try and be a character on the show, but I don't really understand to what end. Like, is this supposed to get Dr. Death Steve Williams over as a heel? Is that the end goal? Because for me, this sort of storyline should always be about getting a wrestler over or building to a match. And it doesn't seem like there's any of that going on. It just seems like it's JR being out there for no reason. And also, like, they really shouldn't be doing graphics of JR. I mean, they even had him before this segment, I think it's before the ad break, they have him talking to Dr. Death Steve Williams, and they have him in profile, and they have the profile focused on the side of his face that is paralyzed still. And it's just so gross to me to be exploiting his physical condition for a storyline question mark. Like, I don't even really understand what the point of it is, but they're clearly exploiting the fact that he had Bell's palsy. And then they show, like, they're talking about his comeback last week and doing a video package about it, and they show a picture of him with his mother who has died, and they're like, you know, JR suffering an attack of Bell's palsy after the death of his mother. That's going to make him sympathetic. Like, nothing that JR is doing here makes him sympathetic, because he's just kind of acting like a petulant child throwing his toys out the pram. But like, telling me that he is back after a bout of Bell's palsy, a debilitating physical condition that he's had to really struggle with, and saying that, like, that's his, you know, like, this is his second of Bell's palsy. It was really tough on him. It was brought on by the death of his mother. Sympathetic. So then when you see people trying to replace him, like, obviously Vince McMahon is a heel too. So Vince McMahon is like, no, get JR out of there. The crowd wants JR. The crowd wants JR to commentate the show because they love JR and they have, you know, like, they've grown up with JR as the voice of, you know, WWF in their ears for so long. Of course they want to see him back. And like, it doesn't work too because the crowd can't hear JR in commentary. Like, they can't hear what he's saying when he's talking to Michael Cole, right? Because they wouldn't have had that broadcast over the arena because it's just commentary. So the crowd's like, yay, we love you. And then Jerry Lawler's just kind of like, I have no idea what the fuck to do in this situation, because it's awkward because Jerry's supposed to be like, everyone's a heel, basically, is the point of this, except for poor Michael Cole, who is just being told that he sucks. And they're really highlighting the fact that Michael Cole is trying to replace JR, which Michael Cole, the character at this point, like, that's not what he's doing. He's just like, he has a job to do and he's trying to commentate a show. Bless him. Like, it made me feel bad for Michael Cole a little bit, but I guess that's all it accomplished. And feeling bad for another announcer is not the most compelling thing on a wrestling show.
This is what this angle will always fascinate me because of sorry, Hulk has decided to somehow jump on a table. Get down. Get down. The Art of Independent Podcasting, ladies and gentlemen. This will always fascinate me, this angle, because it's like everything that you've just said about it is why it kind of fascinates me. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why were they doing it? What was the goal at the end of it? Who was going to get over? Like, I don't understand what the, I mean, maybe the goal was to get Dr. Death Steve Williams over as a heel, but like, Dr. Death ended up kind of just looking like Jim Ross's mum. beside
Well, and
him.
I mean, Dr. Death comes out at the end of this segment to kind of like basically just try to get JR off commentary. So he's kind of doing the bidding of Vince McMahon. So that doesn't really make him look formidable or anything like that. He's just being ordered around by the boss.
Yeah, so but I think when you watch it back now, there's so many elements to it. Like you've got Terry Taylor there, who used to be the Red Rooster. They're doing this is like prime Vince Russo shoot stuff, which I know is your least favorite thing. I like it sometimes. Like I liked the car crash that this was. I didn't like it particularly because it was good. You know, it's like this is like the Truth Commission to me.
Yeah.
This is my Truth Commission.
Which is fair. It's just for me, it's just so gross and exploitative.
Oh, it is 100%. But he agreed to do it, I guess. There wasn't an
He
app.
did, but I mean, what was he gonna say?
I mean,
You know, like, okay,
it
well, you can come back to work or you can not come back to work. Like, he's gonna want to come back to
was
work.
part of a bigger conversation, isn't it, about how many times they did stuff to Jim Ross and he kind of just took it from them. Which is another conversation for another time. We see Ryan Shamrock backstage kissing Goldust. Blue Meanie's crying about it because he's jealous. That leads us to
Is he
Ken.
jealous of Ryan Shamrock or is he jealous of Goldust?
Jealous of. He wants to be Ryan Shamrock, I think.
I think he wants to, like, he's upset that Goldust is not paying attention to him,
Yes.
right? Like, he
Yeah.
doesn't want to be with Ryan Shamrock.
No, he has no interest. So then we get Ken Shamrock versus Goldust. And the play-by-play on this is so bad. Terry Taylor does
It's
not know what he's
horrendous.
doing. Like it's and he was like he was on Heat the night before. I don't understand how he's so bad. My favorite bit later is there's a bit where Triple H says that he's gonna go backstage, grab China, and pull her out into the arena to basically beat her up for what he did for what she did. And you know it's like a really tense moment, right? You're supposed to kind of sell it. And Terry Taylor goes, "Oh, so he's gonna drag China out here next. I can't wait to see that." It's not how you talk about it. You do not talk about it as if it's like a new Avengers trailer. Can't wait. Anyway, ridiculous. But if you've not watched this episode of Raw, if you only go back and kind of listen to these that we do and you don't watch the episode, go to like the point in this episode where Terry Taylor takes over and just listen to the commentary for the match afterwards. It is so horrendous.
I mean, I guess I just tuned it out more than you did because I'm so used to tuning out commentary. Because, like, whenever I watch Raw in 2019, the commentary is so atrocious that my brain can't handle it if I listen too closely. So I didn't pay that much attention to Terry Taylor's commentary. I remember it being not very good. I remember Michael Cole would have been a better idea because they give Michael Cole the night off, right? Like, Vince gives Michael Cole the rest of the night off because he got kicked in the dick by JR. And Michael Cole would have been welcome. Like, Michael Cole gets so much shit on commentary. I do not think he's bad. Like, even at this point, he makes some mistakes, sure, but I don't think he's bad at all. I think he has done some good stuff. And
This,
Terry Taylor is just not that way.
but what they did here, and it's funny, you know, they long term they wanted Michael Cole to be the new JR, right? That was what they wanted,
Then why are you getting him kicked in the dick on television?
I know, but that's what I think what they did here, you know, having Michael Cole almost be the face of like you're trying to replace JR. He never recovered from it. He never has. You know, Michael Cole's always kind of been thought of as. Like I think he's more respected now, but he this angle they did with JR and Dr. Death, I think hurt Michael Cole more than anything else. Really?
Yeah, which is
Because
stupid if you're trying to build him as the lead commentator on your shows.
so Ken Shamrock faces Goldust, Ryan Shamrock and Blue Meanie are on the outside. At one point, Blue Meanie ends up just grabbing Ryan and kissing her. And
And she does not like this. She is not a fan of being kissed by the Blue Meanie. So maybe Blue Meanie did want to be with Ryan Shamrock. Maybe that was why he was crying. I don't know.
And I got the sense he was doing it more to be like, look, I'll do it as well.
Like, he just wants to be involved, which, bless
Oh
him, I guess,
God,
but
there's always one of those friends, isn't there?
oh, there sure is. But I mean, the Blue Meanie trying to kiss Ryan Shamrock and her just not being all about it was kind of interesting because normally she's kind of all about kissing everyone. So apparently that does not extend to the Blue Meanie. And, like, rightfully so, she's like, no, get away from me. I did not invite this.
I thought you were coming at me with more there, Sandra, but that was the end of it.
Nope, that was it.
But in the end, Ken Shamrock beats Goldust with like a belly-to-belly suplex in the most underwhelming three count I've ever seen. Like, it's so underwhelming. Terry Taylor has no idea what he's doing in commentary. Jerry Lawler's trying to do play-by-play. It's a disaster. And then Goldust... So, basically, Shamrock beats Goldust, and then afterwards, Shamrock decks the Blue Meanie, and then Goldust and Ryan Shamrock flee to the backstage area, where I guess Goldust still holds all the cards leading into WrestleMania.
Apparently so. It just, the whole Ryan Shamrock thing bothers me so much, like so much on the show, that it's very hard for me to enjoy anything that Ken Shamrock is doing, because it, like, the specter of Ryan Shamrock is attached to it. And it would be different if, like, if someone would ask Ryan Shamrock what she wants, right? No one has asked her. No one has talked to her. No one has been like, hey, Ryan Shamrock, why are you sleeping with all the wrestlers backstage? Hey, Ryan Shamrock, how do you feel about your brother trying to do these things? No, like, she's just Ken Shamrock's sister, and she's such a prop for the, you know, furthering of the storytelling of the men. And it just drives me insane, because she's not even treated like a person. She's just the trophy to be passed around.
Which,
and is Goldust supposed to be the babyface here now? Like, wasn't Goldust just a heel?
No, maybe he was babyface because he was came back to beat up Val Venus for stealing his wife.
Oh, right. No, but he was a heel when he stole... No, wait.
Oh, yeah, then, then he went heel to steal Al Snow's head. But then he went babyface again when he was... Well, I don't know.
See, this is why this show hurts my brain, because I don't even know who is supposed to be a good guy and who is supposed to be a bad guy. Like, we know that Ken Shamrock is supposed to be a bad guy because he's in the corporation and he's being horrible to his sister. But, like, it just kind of seems like this is a show full of heels for the most part. Like, the only real likable person is what, Mankind? Is there anyone else on the show that's likable? Like, Billy Gunn, maybe?
I mean, I think Austin's likable because he's kind of the working class man. You get behind him.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'm sure there's others, but yeah, there are a lot of heels and a lot of baby faces who act like heels. But we also get the glory in this episode, Sandra, of Vince McMahon telling Patterson and Briscoe that they need to go and find the Ministry and keep tabs on them, which gives us the Stooges searching for the Ministry in the pits of the arena with like blankets over them.
They're dressed like druids.
I mean, this... Did you live for this?
This was great. Like, the Stooges dressed like druids with, like, head flashlights on them. Fantastic. Like, looking in the bowels of the arena and all that kind of stuff. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the Stooges shenanigans. It was probably the best part of the show.
The Stooges were really fun here. Just trying to... You know, and there's one point where, like, Jed O'Briscoe's trying to, like, tell Patterson that, like, he had the amateur background so they could go in and get them.
Yes. Well, and did you notice that Pat Patterson, again, offered to go get Vince McMahon coffee before he dispatched them?
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite trope. I love it.
You know, so imagine that Terry Taylor and Jerry Lawler are both on commentary. Neither of them play-by-play guys at all. Let's add Shane McMahon to the mix.
Oh, gosh. Let's not and say we did. Shane McMahon is so bad on commentary. He's so bad. I know that he's supposed to be an annoying prick, but it's like, I just want to mute my television bad.
We get Test against X-Pac with Shane and China in the corner, Triple H in the other corner. Shane's on commentary. He is unbearable. He just keeps screaming all the time, but Test... But there is a pretty fun exchange towards the end where it's like, it looks like X-Pac's going to go for the Bronco Buster, and then China rolls in to try and take him out, but then Triple H grabs her, but then Shane runs in with the belt, and it's like a whole thing, and in the end, Test gets the win. And Triple H is raging. He says he's going to go back to the locker room, grab China, bring it out here to humiliate her in front of the world. I thought it was a pretty good kind of segment for what it was, kind of building stuff between the corporation and DX. What did you make of the whole shenanigans, if you can in any way separate Shane and his horrendous commentary?
Honestly, it was too hard to watch because Shane's horrendous commentary was just like all over the place. I thought China looked amazing. Like, China on this show just looks incredible. I actually really like when she has her hair pulled back and doesn't have the bangs. Like, that just, I don't know, it works for me. And like, her sort of like bra top that she's wearing does not look very supportive at all. Like, she almost has a little bit of underboob coming out. And I wonder how effective that's going to be in combat. But I don't know. She looks fantastic and she's great and she's my favorite part. And Shane is bad and Test is bad at wrestling and X-Pac is good at wrestling, but bless him, there wasn't a lot he could do here. The shenanigans of it were fun enough. Like, I mean, DX versus the Corporation obviously is not going to be the feud that I'm super invested in DX winning. So it's just kind of like, I don't really like many people in the Corporation other than China. So it's hard for me to really invest in the story. And then with Shane just like screaming and Jerry Lawler and Terry Taylor not really being able to do much about it, the whole thing was just kind of a shambles. But some of the shenanigans were fun.
I do love a car crash. Then we got the Stooges try to barge into a room they've been standing outside of, and it's Godfather and his hoes that are in there. And the Godfather knocks the Stooges down before closing the door. I mean, you can't make up a world where Pat Patterson breaks into the Godfather and his hoes. I mean,
It's pretty great.
anyway, so up next we get the Godfather against Steve Blackman, but then
The match everyone's clamoring for.
Steve Blackman, for the first time ever, is likable here because he decides, well, obviously, if I get the opportunity to spend a night with these ladies or to fight, I'm going to spend a night with these ladies. So he decides to take that offer, as Vader had done once before, but then didn't do it because Bart Grant
Regal
turned
did
up.
too.
Regal did it as well, yeah. So Regal did it, Vader did it. And Steve Blackman. So there you go. There's the smartest men in wrestling.
Can you imagine them as a stable?
I mean, I would totally buy into it, but yeah, I'd go for it.
I think it'd be kind of great.
But Draws ends up coming out to spoil all the fun. He attacks Blackman. So then we get the Godfather kind of trying to help Blackman against Draws. Then the lights go out. Then the Undertaker appears. And the Ministry destroy everybody. And The Undertaker promises that no matter what, there will be a sacrifice tonight. Bonkers, but I had fun watching it for the 2 minutes that this entire thing took place, which was the Godfather against Steve Blackman, the interference from Draws, and the Ministry coming out and beating everybody up. 2.5 minutes.
There's a lot going on here. There's definitely a lot going on here. I mean, I still question the business practices of the Godfather. I will never get over that. But yeah, I mean, it was fun enough, I guess. Like, Steve Blackman deciding to take the ladies. Steve Blackman never really looks like he wants to do much of anything in the wrestling ring, right? So it makes sense that he was like, oh, I can just not have a match. That makes sense to me. I will not have a match. I can't imagine that he would even like want to do much with the ladies. Like, he'd probably just be like, okay, go play amongst yourselves. I'm gonna sit here and stare pensively. But yeah, like, it saved us from Steve Godfather, which is nice because that was not a match I really wanted to see at all. Draws is so incredibly uninteresting to me, and I don't understand why he exists. And yeah, again, the lights went out, and I was hoping that it was just going to be the Brood bloodbathing people, and then it turned out to be the Undertaker to talk, which wasn't helpful. But if there's so much going on in like 2.5 minutes, right? It's just a lot.
Then we have Triple H and China having their face off because China comes out and basically says, you know, if you want me, I'm here. They're about to face off. The lights go out. Kane comes out. Then China holds Triple H for a fireball that Kane's going to shoot out of his hand. But instead, Triple H ducks and China gets the fireball instead. And then Kane's trying to comfort China, but he keeps throwing the EMTs out of the ring who are trying to help her. Classic Kane, really.
Classic Kane. And also, like, so say you get a fireball to the face, right?
Right.
My first instinct, I mean, I've never had a fireball in my face, but I have had burns on my skin before, right? And my first instinct is not to grab the burn because that's going to hurt worse. So China sitting, what is Hulk doing in the background? Oh my gosh. But like, China is sitting there like grabbing her face and like holding on to her face so that she, I don't know, basically so that she can't show the audience that her face is not like horrendously burned, right? But it just seemed counterintuitive to me because like you wouldn't want to grab that area. Like that's just going to hurt worse if you put pressure on it, you know? So that seemed very, very odd, but it was kind of sweet that Kane wanted to help China. I don't know why he was like shooing away the EMTs. I guess maybe he just doesn't trust EMTs. Maybe he thinks that like the EMTs are going to bring her to the morgue or the lunatic asylum or whatever, because that tends to be what happens to him. But you know, Kane carries China off, and they have a really nice friendship. I think that they have a very interesting partnership. They're like two of the characters that I'm most interested in on the show, and I kind of want to see where this goes. I was a little bummed that the fireball didn't hit Triple H, if I'm honest.
One of the other things that Terry Taylor did in this show that, for whatever reason, you know, little things just get to you, and it doesn't. It's not the. It's the worst thing in the world, but it just gets to you. Terry Taylor kept calling Triple H Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and it really bothered me because he doesn't get called that anymore at any point. And he would be doing it, and then Jerry Lawler would say Triple H, like he's saying Triple H to give you the cue, but he keeps calling him Hunter Hearst Helmsley over and over
Like
and over
it's almost
again.
like he's elbowing Terry Taylor. Triple H,
Yeah.
remember his name?
This fireball segment was cut out of the Sky Sports version in 1999.
Was it really? Why was this segment cut out?
There's a couple of like fire things that they cut out. I don't really know why.
Did they show Inferno matches?
Makes no sense. But yeah, Kane and China's relationship continues to be pretty interesting and will be a
'Cause they're
focal.
kind of the two in the corporation who don't necessarily fit in, right? Like they're not pure evil. They just join the corporation because, I mean, Kane doesn't even really seem to want to be there. He just doesn't want to go back to the insane asylum. And China isn't like pure evil. She just felt outcast by DX and, you know, obviously wanted the money. But you don't get the feeling that China's just like a pure evil person or anything like that. And you don't get the idea that Kane is like a pure evil person. Like Kane's been through a lot. He's been brainwashed, he's been locked in a room, he's had a lot going on. So I feel kind of bad for both of them, and I think that the two of them finding each other is kind of lovely.
Then we get Tori against Luna with Sable on guest commentary. She gives Jerry Lawler a copy of her Playboy. They show you the kind of images of her at a signing. I mean, you can see how that she, you can basically the promo they showed was basically a representation of how she got too big for her boots. Like she thought that because of the amount of people who came to see her at these things meant that she was bigger than WWF, didn't need them anymore. And then she was never able to make it because they own Sable, the name, and all that kind of stuff. She would go on to do another Playboy cover, I think, as Rina Mero, that didn't do as well. But anyway, so we get Tori against Luna. Tori wins by DQ, and Luna won't break a chokehold about 40 seconds into the match. Sable does nothing to stop Luna assaulting Tori. She finally comes in, and then Sable rips Tori's shirt off and dances before she leaves.
Yeah, this is pretty much dog shit. So out with Sable, and she's wearing the Sable Bomb t-shirt, right? Because obviously the whole thing is that she's Sable's biggest fan. And I think what WWF has taught us is that if you are a crazed fan who gets into the ring multiple times, you will get a job with the World Wrestling Federation. So, you know, great story to tell the audience there, WWF. Because we've seen it twice now, right? Like Steve Blackman and Tori both got their jobs by being fans and jumping into the ring. So I mean,
Don't try
Sable's
this at home.
awful. Don't try this at home, unless you want a job with the World Wrestling Federation. So, like, Sable's obviously terrible on commentary. Like, she's real bad. And I'm not saying that Luna versus Tori is a match that I was dying to see. And I am not saying that that was going to be a good match at all. But it does bother me when there's a wrestling match going on in the ring and the camera focuses on commentary the majority of the time. Like, it's all about Sable just like showing her Playboy cover to Jerry Lawler and talking to him. And I mean, Terry Taylor, bless him, is like trying to talk about the match at one point. He's not very good at it, but like, he's trying to talk about the match. And Jerry Lawler's like, no, don't interrupt. Like, Sable has important things to say about her Playboy cover. And like, there's a match going on. And then, of course, you know, Sable like beating up Tori afterwards. And then, I mean, you say dancing. I guess she sort of dances, but she's not even good at that. So I don't understand the point of this. And this is the female wrestling that we have on the show. This is it.
There's an interesting behind the scenes story for this week because the match here that Luna has with Tori, this is Luna's farewell. She let go right after this.
What?
And I'll read out to you the reason, which was in the Observer that week, which says, Luna was let go this past week because of four separate incidents where there were problems with other talent and things said that made the front office decide it was impossible to keep her. Apparently, the things she said a few weeks ago on Raw about not getting a shot because she's not as pretty as Sable had been bothering her. She had problems in recent weeks backstage with Sable, Mark Mero, Jack Lanza, and Jacqueline. She complained about the angle where Gangrel was hung by the Ministry as a prelude to them joining. She basically challenged Mark Mero to a fight backstage before St. Valentine's Day Massacre. She blew up at Jacqueline, who she had been friends with in Dayton, Ohio, claiming that the Jacqueline Ivory match on Heat that didn't air was them stealing her style of match, whatever that means, and got mad at Lanza that night as well. This led to several of the women being uncomfortable working with her. The plan at one point was for Luna to win the women's title from Sable at WrestleMania, although Sable getting over changed that plan. But yeah, that's Luna gone for now.
That's a bummer. I mean, it sounds like she was having some difficulties backstage, and I kind of understand. Like, if she's that difficult to work with, then it makes sense. But it's a bummer because Luna's great. Like, she's, a good wrestler and actually one of the compelling characters on the show who could have done a lot more in the women's division. Like, I would have liked to see a lot more like Luna and Jacqueline and, Ivory and people like that kind of mixing it up. So it's a bummer that she's gone.
Well,
And this is her farewell.
as we know, she is back in time for next year's Miss Rumble 2000 swimsuit competition.
That's true,
So
because she is in that.
she does come back later on in the year, but for now, this was her. She was let go. Then we got the Undertaker and the Ministry cornering the Big Boss Man in the parking lot and attacking him. They then raise him on an Undertaker symbol. As Boss Man's getting raised up, the Undertaker says that he will destroy the corporation piece by piece, and then she will be his. Sorry, she will be his. Boss Man tries to get free of the symbol. Ministry beat him up again. The corporation finally comes out to make the save. The police then try and arrest the Undertaker. He knocks a few of them down before eventually allowing himself to be arrested as his symbol burns in the background. And the Undertaker is led to a police car with police officers to be arrested. As Vince McMahon screams at him that he better stay in jail, because if he doesn't, Vince McMahon is coming for him. Again, this is like 5 minutes where I feel like we had a lot of stuff to unpack.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to unpack. It's funny because you say that, he said that she will be his. And like knowing who he's talking about, I guess that makes sense. But I completely missed that when I was watching the show. I feel like they're sprinkling in all of these references that you're probably supposed to be intrigued by, but they just kind of go straight over my head because like I'm not looking for a future story and I'm not like, ooh, analyzing the clues of what the Undertaker is saying or anything like that. It's just, I mean, he's just always talking bish, isn't he? So okay, ministry, like you apparently have this higher power, and also you are going after some sort of lady, and I don't really know why. I mean, the Big Boss Man getting, sacrificed and then being able to break out of the ties on the Undertaker symbol cracked me up because the ministry is so shit that they can't even tie someone's symbol properly to murder him.
Classic ministry.
Classic ministry, right? I mean, like the Big Boss Man is like he is big and strong for sure, but he hasn't been like a superhuman strength type character. Like he has a nightstick and will beat you up. That's all he is. So they're so bad at sacrificing, and that's like all they do. So I don't really know what the ministry are on about. But the visual of Undertaker getting arrested is pretty funny. Like, are they arresting him for attempted murder? Or are they arresting him for disorderly conduct? Like, I'm not super sure. And when Vince McMahon was like screaming at the police officers, I couldn't tell whether Vince McMahon wanted the Undertaker to be arrested or whether he didn't want the Undertaker to be arrested. Like it almost seemed like he was glad that the Undertaker was going to jail, and he was like, "You should stay in jail." But it also seemed like he was trying to interfere with the police officers taking the Undertaker to jail. Like he wanted to beat him up, which would probably not be a great plan on the part of Vince McMahon. Yeah, I mean, this is bonkers. The Ministry are so crap. Like they're so crap.
Are they crapper than you expected them to be?
Yeah, because everyone talks about the ministry, right? And I mean, the Undertaker is obviously such a lauded performer in WWF history that I expected it to be like effective at least, but it's not. Like, it's not effective at all.
It's it's a time in the history of wrestling. Just like there's a time in history where Donald Trump was president. The ministry
That's,
and Donald
yeah.
Trump. So main event time, it is Paul White is the referee for Mankind against Stone Cold Steve Austin. The match goes about 9 minutes. It's the usual kind of brawl that these two guys have. On commentary, we've got Rock basically like questioning Paul White at every opportunity to see what his bias was. And in the end, Mankind wins it by count out. And after the match, The Rock comes in, attacks Austin from behind, but Austin recovers and knocks him out of the ring to kind of finish the show. So I'm curious, how much is it working for you having the Austin Rock main event scene that's kind of there and having Mankind and Paul White kind of semi-involved with it as well?
I mean, it's working. Is this going to lead to Mankind and Paul White? Because that seems to be the only, like, are they just going to be referees or is there going to be something more? Because it seems like this is going to lead to something. I don't know.
There's going to be
Like,
something more.
okay. Because for all of this kerfuffle to be about like a special second guest referee spot just seems like a lot, right? Like, I guess it's the just with stakes on Raw, but again, like I don't trust that the stakes are going to really mean anything. Like it's fine because I guess like, but it seems like it's taking the focus from Rock and Austin, and WrestleMania is not far away, right? Like it's in a week and a half,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, so we need to get that done before we leave for New York. So it's kind of fun that there are intertwined stories. I like intertwined stories. Intertwined stories are good. They make the universe feel more fully formed. And I like when it's not just like the same people facing off all the time. I talk about that a lot. So in that sense, I really do like it. Paul White and The Rock dissension, I still don't really know if it's real or not, I guess. I guess it's sort
Do you
of
know
become real.
what I kind of thought about watching this was, see, so Paul White made his debut at Valentine's Day Massacre, and it feels like
Least effective debut ever.
at least a classic Big Show, but like it feels like every single appearance he has, he is either exposing himself to not be as good as people thought he was, or it feels like he's diminished every time you see him. You know, if
Well,
like,
he
the
doesn't look that invested in what he's doing. Like, even the way that he, you know, in this match or whatever, like, he just kind of like casually steps over the ropes and he's just kind of doing what he does. And, like, I mean, he's the referee here, right? And I remember that. Like, he's sort of like fast counting or slow counting as a, you know, special guest dickhead referee because he wants, but who does he even want to win here? He wants Mankind to win, which that's the part that doesn't make sense to me, is that you make Paul White the referee here, and why would he want Mankind to win over Steve Austin in this particular scenario? Like, why would he want there to be a second referee? Why wouldn't he want all the power?
I mean, that's you're asking for that logic on the same show where the entire show it was very obvious that the Undertaker and the Corporation wanted the Boss Man, and it was still somehow a shock for the Corporation to come and help him.
That's the thing, though. I mean, that's my problem with the show is that there's a lot of great storytelling that happens, and there are a lot of obviously character motivations that I can point to. But some of the internal logic does kind of fall apart when you examine it, and it makes it harder to get invested in the story because it's just so convoluted, right? It's these Raws seem to have to live by the philosophy that, like, if everything is happening, stuff is happening, then it's good. And, you know, like I didn't get to talk about like Fastlane or the Raw after Fastlane or whatever, but it seemed like that was kind of the strategy. It was like so much is gonna happen and everything we're just gonna throw everything at the wall. And I understand trying that, but like sometimes when you throw too much at the wall, it is too much of a thing and it's just overload and it starts to fall apart.
Overall, where would your thumb be for this episode of Raw? We've pretty much got everything for WrestleMania kind of confirmed or nailed down here in the March 8th episode. But my prediction is you're down for this one. What is your thumb?
It is a thumbs down, but before we get into this, last week or whenever the last time we did Retro Raw, we failed to mention this, and we are not failing to mention it again. We are getting Mean Street Posse vignettes on these shows, and we need to talk about them because I am the most excited about the Mean Street Posse.
Well, I thought what we were going to do is wait until they debut And then
we
we
need
just
to talk about these vignettes. They're so good.
they're just there was a feeling that I got in 1999 of how much I hated them from the vignettes, and I got that exact same feeling back watching it again, which is genius.
See, and I'm so excited. Like the Mean Street Posse are, I've never really seen much of their stuff. Like I've seen the fight where they sit on the couch. And I've seen just like certain vignettes. I am so excited for the Mean Street Posse. I love these vignettes. I think they're fantastic. I think taking to the mean streets of Greenwich, I think Pete Gass in his sweater vest just looking like a prick and talking about Shane McMahon. And then was it Rodney talking about how they would like drive down the road and hit mailboxes, and then they would get out and beat up another mailbox just because they were rich and they were bored and they could. Oh, they're such pricks. They are such pricks. I know these people. I grew up with some of these people, right? Like some of the more rich people in Hudsonville, they just remind me of that. So I am living for the Mean Street Posse. I am so excited for them to debut. I love Pete Gass. I find him adorable. Yeah, I cannot wait. Like they're going to be insufferable, I'm sure. And they make perfect sense, right? Because Shane McMahon is a prick on Retro Raw here and a prick in 2019 again, so everything's lovely. But I can't wait for him to have his Mean Street Posse of just like they have too much money and they're disaffected by society and they're just so above everything and they're just horrible, and I'm so excited about it.
I mean, when you really sat down and thought about it, Sondra was going to love the Mean Street Posse. There's just no way
Of
around it.
course.
But yes, but for the show, thumbs down, right?
Oh yeah, thumbs down. Didn't like it.
I'm going to put this as a thumbs in the middle because it was never boring for me. I felt like it was almost like it was a cardio workout to watch it. And I think I'm probably just giving it more of a thumbs in the middle because I had to watch last night's Raw, which, had a really great Drew McIntyre promo and a really great Ronda Rousey killing somebody bit. But apart from that, like the rest of it was just so kind of spread out. Whereas this show was like boom, 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 boom. You didn't get any time to breathe at any point. Maybe like a middle ground would be good.
A middle ground would be lovely. And I think that we've seen middle ground sometimes. I think that in 1999 we've seen middle ground, and I think we've seen middle ground in 2019 too. Like I don't want it to just be like, old is good and new is bad, or new is good and old is bad. Like last night's Raw sounds pretty dire, so I'm not gonna watch the whole thing. I'm gonna
It's not even as
skim through
dire, it's just
clips.
a bit dull. That's all it is. It's just a bit dull.
Well, and I don't have time for 3 hours of dull. I have way too much to catch up on this week after being sick, so I will skim through Raw. I will probably not watch all of Raw. I'll watch the relevant bits, but yeah, like I mean, I don't want to sit through a 3 hour program that is dull at all. But I also don't want so much thrown at me that I can't process it or don't trust what's going on my screen.
Yeah, I think a happy medium would be ideal.
Yes.
To play us out this week, let's have the Oddities music since Luna's leaving and the Oddities are pretty much no more. But Sandra, do you want to do the plugs quickly?
Sure. Follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, for tons of bonus content. We do pay-per-views, classic pay-per-views. PowerSlam Overrun with Kenny and Finn goes up every week. It's tons of bonus content. Your support really helps us out, helps us keep doing what we're doing. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for lots of video interview content that Kenny's putting up. More clips have just gone up with. Was I'm trying to think what just went up recently.
Chris Jericho talked about the disappointment of main event in WrestleMania 18. Dave Meltzer
Yes,
is
that's what it
up
was.
talking about Ronda Rousey's run in WWE so far and how he would rate the run. So always good
Excellent.
new stuff going
I
on.
knew I had seen that videos had gone up that I haven't watched yet, so I need to get on those. And there are no shows to promote currently, so I think those are the plugs.
That is the plugs. So we want to thank you for being so patient with us. Tours always end up that it just gets fucked. So we will try next time for it to not be as bad, but you never know.
Well, it didn't
Sandra,
help that I was like out of commission for a week and talked to like a robot.
that wasn't helpful. But I'm glad that you sound better and you are on your way back to the land of the living. So
Getting there.
thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Here are the Oddities featuring Luna. Bye.
Bye.
We didn't lie to you, folks. We told you we had living, breathing monstrosity.
It don't think it's funny. It's sad, isn't it?